to start speaking out more about their feelings and on the, you know, of outrage about what's going on. You know, the government will usurp as much power as we let them usurp, and unfortunately, we just have not only allowed them but encouraged them to, you know, to just strip us of so many rights that, you know, it's kind of like the price of gas. You know, once it goes up, it's not going to go back. You know, although I guess it has gone back. But at any rate, once they take away our rights, it's not gonna change.
It's not gonna be easy to get them back.
No, it's not. And the movement is, you know, it's
the right wing riptide.
Well, I don't necessarily think it. I mean, the right wing is pissed off about this too.
Right.
The ultra right wing is infuriated by the stripping of our civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't consider civil rights to be a right wing or a left wing issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in fact, it's been put forth a theory that a lot of the laws that have stripped us of our civil rights were in fact, for instance, perpetrated by bleeding heart liberals, i.e. the helmet laws, the seatbelt laws, these things where you know, we can't protect ourselves, we're not intelligent enough to protect ourselves, so the government has to come in and do it, which of course, you know, I'm going to alienate all of you Nader folk out there, but he's one of the proponents of these sorts of laws that take our rights away, you know, for this illusion of safety.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a little grist for thought there. And
no problem.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, there's a controversy downtown about folks privatizing the sidewalk. I should say folks, two businesses, Sushi
yeah.
Now and Alibaba's Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some malcontents, I among them, who have been essentially saying, hey, let's keep this area public. Are we being too hard on these small businesses?
You know, I don't know. I don't know enough about the issue to say. Have these people all sat down and talked to each other? You know, I mean, I don't know. You said you talked to Jerry Henry. You know, none of this would have happened if somebody just sat down and talked to Jerry,
mm-hmm.
and seen where he was coming from and understood, you know, what the situation was. I don't know if that's happened.
Well, the backdrop is that you know, I went to Matisse Selman, who I know fairly well, at least in terms of, you know, we chat in a friendly fashion. He put up a flyer of mine about the farmers market harassment 6 or 8 months ago. He claims to be, you know, concerned about homeless people and homeless civil rights, and has indeed given away free food to different people at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, here's the city council rushing through this deal on January 8th of setting up this green metal fence, which they've now done.
Mm-hmm.
How about instead let's have some codes of conduct and really sit down
like the musicians.
Like the musicians,
right.
And also just sort of at least post them, see if they work, let's
yeah.
try. And he said, well, why don't you email to me what they are? And I sat down and took notes for about half an hour listening to him talk, and,
uh-huh.
you know, we discussed it. And I went to Alibaba's Cafe, talked
right.
to him, took some notes from him, although mostly it was from Matisse. Then I went to the kids, and I said, what are your concerns? And I wrote down what they said,
uh-huh.
and sort of, you know, used some of my own observations. I came up with 3 pages of concerns. I emailed these out to some interested people. The only people who got back to me were sort of mediators in the middle, neither Ali Bka nor mm. Matisse. And he just told me later, well, you know, we got this thing resolved. I don't see any problem, you know.
Yeah.
Just, you know, not going to do anything about it. You know, you're
mm-hmm.
it's a done deal. Why are you wasting your energy on this?
Yeah.
You know, this is ridiculous.
Well, obviously there has to be a balance. I mean, we all know there have to be some guidelines set. I mean, obviously, we don't want people, you know, pulling down their pants and urinating and next to somebody who's sitting eating. And I mean, you know, there has to be a balance,
which hasn't yet happened in that area as far as
no,
I know.
No, I know. I'm just
there was
an
spitting
extreme
right here,
so that I can show that there has to be some sort of a balance.
Right.
And the only way I think that's ever going to happen is if there's a dialogue.
Right.
You know, and Ali would sit down and say, look, it, you know, this this is driving my people, my customers away, and can't we...
Well, I just suggested posting some guidelines so that people could, you know, and also, and then promulgating them as in written form, and I was willing to do that, but the, you know, these businesses were, I think, you know, they had a fait accompli, they were going to proceed.
Well, as long as they've got, they realize that they have the full force of our...
Redevelopment agency.
Their private police force, the Santa Cruz PD,
right.
on their side, of course they
won't
Butchie
have Butchie Baker eats sushi every day at,
at
Sushi Now, and he double parks his squad car next to the next to Sushi Now in an area that none of us could park in.
Well, see, that's the problem. When they know that they have that, there's no reason for them to compromise, and so it becomes, you know, that Nazi kind of situation where it's nothing instead of something. You know, I mean, and of course, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that never resolves the situation, because then those people aren't going to go away. They're just going to pop up somewhere else, and it's going to continue to be a problem.
We've been talking with attorney Kate Wells, Santa Cruz stalwart, who's out there in the boonies and struggling to make her house payments.
Cool.
Thanks for being with us, Kate.
All right. Send in your donations.
Hey, send your donation. 423 Huff. I'll take my chunk and send the rest to you.
Yeah, you'll take your cut, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Kate.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And believe it or not, you're with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Call in if you'd like, 427-3772.
The homeland, our problem, for only one reason. That president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless, our problem, for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? Imperialism, who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me who owns the land? I am just a white man, who owns the land? I live in the Americas, who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? 'Cause I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Maybe it's me and you. Not the corporations. Maybe the earth owns its own self. Maybe it's...
Well, it's about 12:15 on February 20th, 2002. I'm here in front of the Rittenhouse fence
and I'm talking to a man with a sign, homeless and need work, please help if you can, thank you. Hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
Steve Sterling.
Steve, you're out here on the sunny shine after the rainy time, and you say you've gotten a couple of jobs, but pickings are pretty slim?
Yes, real slim.
And your kind of work is?
I do drywall, cement work, mainly a laborer for construction. And I work like a dog if I can get some work, you know.
Are you outside at the moment?
Yeah, I'm homeless. I stay up at the Armory right now.
How is that at the Armory?
It's, considering it's better than being out in the rain and the cold, you know. But it's not too bad, actually.
Does that interfere with your work schedule?
Yes, it does, because I could go up there labor ready and, and they you got to be down there at least 5 o'clock, and there's a ton of people down there already, you know. And
five Armory. In the morning, or
yeah, 5 in the morning. And
what time in the morning do you actually get out of the Armory?
About 6:15. First bus leaves at 6:15. Yeah, to get back down here. So it kind of messes me up as far as going down there and getting work. You know,
you can't leave early if you want.
I don't have a vehicle unless I walk. You know, I guess I could walk if I wanted.
Do they allow people to walk out of the Armory?
I don't think they do.
I didn't think so. At least they haven't in the past.
Yeah.
What about trying to get work at San Lorenzo Labor Yard, Lumber Yard?
I talked to some friends down there, and every time I go down there, the whole sidewalk's filled, and people tell me they've been out in weeks, you know. One guy told me the last time he got a job was right before Christmas, you know, so.
Where are you from originally?
Santa Cruz County here.
And you've been here, you were born here?
Yeah, I was born in Santa Cruz County.
And this question, no doubt, other social service types have asked you, how long have you been homeless?
About 6-7 years.
And any precipitating event or any comments as to how people get homeless?
Well, how I became homeless, I had a good job down south in San Fernando Valley, and I was diagnosed with lung cancer, and they removed half my right lung, and they got all the cancer, to make a long story short, but my, as far as moving, working at a moving company, my breathing and stuff, you know, it affected the ability of my working as far as moving furniture and stuff, you know. So they finally let me go, and I've been out here since.
Well, yeah, you're looking for manual labor to rest a job, right?
Yeah, but I got to do something, and that's all I know, you know.
What kind of a wage do you usually get paid for your manual labor?
I try to get 10 at least, you know, but I work for 7, I've worked for 5, you know, it beats a blank, you know.
What's the last job you've gotten and how much did it pay? How long was it for?
The last job I got was about 3 hours and I got paid $7 an hour for painting, doing a little bit of painting.
Yeah. How long ago did you get that?
It was probably about 5 days ago.
Are you pretty much in the same place here every day?
I'm right here
so
every day.
If folks want to hire you, they can right across from the Neary Business Center, about 1362 Pacific, that's on the other side of the street, and your name is?
And that was an interview on the mall. Now we have a call-in from Portland, Oregon. We're speaking with?
Jack Tafari. My name is Jack Tafari, and I'm the chairman of the Village Council up here in Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon.
What is Dignity Village, Jack?
Basically, we're now a lawful entity pursuing business. We began as a bunch of people pushing around shopping carts, basically refusing to. We came out of some doorways and basically we refused to go back into them. And the camping ban was overturned over here. And you know, the window of opportunity opened itself. And you know, history kind of threw down a challenge, and we picked it up here. And what we are now is we're a tent city out on the edge of town. We pay rent. We pay $2,222 a month to this, and we have an agreement with the city that we can stay here on this leaf composting site, and the name of the place is Sunderland Yard, and we can stay here until the 1st of July. And what we're doing out here is we're starting to build the New Jerusalem. We're impatient to find our perma sites, and we're doing some amazing construction out here. Green, friendly, you know, eco-friendly construction.
How many are you?
We're 60 strong. That's what we agreed to with the city. We tried, we fought like hell to get 80 of us. There are 2,000 to 3,000 people sleeping out in Portland on any given night, but we fought like hell for 80 They wanted to give us 45, to let 45 people live in a community in relative peace and with sanitation and in decency and in dignity, and we managed to get 60 of ourselves out of the doorway.
And you are a drug-free group or alcohol-free? Or?
Yeah, we don't deal in all that stuff. You know, alcohol is quite a legal drug. And so legal drugs like alcohol, of course, we're adults, we're not children, you know, we can go to bars and things, but we ask that people don't use it in their homes, right, which is unusual, because most people can have a drink in their homes, and don't allow it to impact badly on the community. You know, if you come home and you've had a few and you're feeling a bit, do you know what I mean, like, you know, whatever, angry or whatever happens with alcohol, I drink, you know, on occasion, a couple times of Guinness. But please just go to your tent and go home, and that's it, keep it off, and we'll talk about it in the cold, sober light of morning, if there's anything to talk about.
Have you had to call police on any occasions to deal with problems in Dignity Village, and do you have your own internal policing force? How does that work?
Well, we have a very good security crew. Ken Two Dogs is our security chief. He's our contact point and our liaison with the police. And the situation with the police, on our last site, we had a protocol, you know, a signed agreement, and we defined our perimeter, our boundaries, and it's basically a good neighbor agreement, you know, with the police, you know, in, you know, trying to work together. And we didn't want dangerous situations. We didn't want the police running our borders, you know, with guns and people shouting at them, and the police feeling, you know, like uncomfortable and sort of doing the mental calculations and counting their bullets, and these are homeless trash and whatever they think of us, you know. And so we wanted to keep it safe, so we have...
How frequently have police been called? And I mean, have you used them at all for arrests and, inside Dignity Village?
No, not inside the village. We haven't had the police come in and arrest. Usually our security... you know, it's usually drinking problems, and occasionally it's domestic violence, you know, as any community has. But the thing about living in a tent is that if there's a domestic problem between a couple, right, you know, it impacts on everyone in the community because the walls are thin, so it affects you and it affects me and it affects everyone, and people tend to get involved in situations like that. We try to, you know, deal with situations as best we can, and point people in the right direction, to get people the counseling and things they need if there's a domestic problem.
You mentioned there are 2,000 to 3,000 homeless people in Portland. Have any other kind of Dignity Village type situations arisen, or are people, is there a more of a hands-off policy for people because of the Judge Gallagher's overturning of the camping ban a year and a half ago?
No, they still sweep and carry on, but they're a little bit more, I don't know how you would say it, you know, they're a little bit better than they were before. You know, they consider people a little bit, they have a little bit more respect for homeless people, but not much, you know, people are swept in other areas. A lot of times the police will take car campers, for example, if you're parked down by the yacht club, right, they'll say, oh, no, we can't have this here, this is unsightly, living in an old vehicle, please go out and park by Dignity Village, and that's okay. But now and again, we get people that are real Freddy Kruegers and make everyone nervous and cause problems, and the police send them here, and then the police are reluctant to deal with them. You know, they just sort of push problematic people over to them.
So how many people... How many people live in vehicles near Dignity Village?
Right now it's not so bad. We had a huge car camp around us at our 17th and Savior site under the Fremont Bridge. We had a huge, and there was a tent city next to us that was quote-unquote illegal, right, because they were attracted to us because of our sanitation and the benefits we provided, right, but, you know, they didn't have dumpsters and things like that, and they drank and got rowdy and got wild over there sometimes.
Did they name themselves? Do they have a name, or?
They were kind of thinking of a name and formulating a name, you know, but...
Do they survive still, or have they disappeared?
No, they would get swept usually on every three-week basis. They were called Durstonville, Sergeant Sergeant Powell named them that after Bob Durston, who works for Commissioner Stent's office. Kind of like a Hooverville.
Mm.
You know that kind of name?
I see.
Yeah.
So there are then, I'm sorry, there are other other tent cities in Portland even as we speak or not?
There are other encampments, you know, down by the Ross Island Bridge. There's a few hundred people that sleep under and around there. And one of the food vans that comes around, the messenger van, goes down there. There are hundreds of people sleeping out all over the place here in Portland. But what Portland seems to be saying, the message seems to be that scattered site camping, you know, with all of the dirt and drugs and violence and problems and theft and all that, that's okay for most people. And a few of us, you know, people are starting to view us as kind of like upper middle homeless here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because we're formerly homeless and we managed to get ourselves out of being homeless, and now we live in tents, which are evolving now. We're building structures around them, and with some of the structures, basically we're building our own houses. The tents are sort of disappearing out of them. They're being folded up for the next move. And we're building, you know, amazing structures here. We have showers now.
Mm-hmm.
In one of our founding documents, it's called We Need a Tent City. You know, it says we need a tent city, we need a tent city, we need a tent city for various reasons. And something else it said was that we need showers open between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., like the ones in Compass Center in Seattle, where working homeless people have a greater window of opportunity to have a shower. The only way we'll get these is if we get them ourselves, which is what we've done. It took a year. Praise God.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've also been in touch with the Isla Vista encampment, which has been going for about a month and a half now. Any comments on how your communications with them have been going? That's Isla Vista, California.
Yeah, much respect to those people down there, to Jenny. I'd like to say hello and a big shout-out and big love and respect to Jenny Jett and to Guitar Dave and to Chris and Mitch down there and all the crew down there. These are the people that I've, you know, touched base with and been in contact with. Yeah, we understand exactly what you're going through down there. I see in this group of people the same exhilaration that we felt, you know, in our early days, in our early history. We began on our birthday is the 16th of December in the year 2000, and their birthday is the 25th of January in this year. So they've been going just a short while, but I see in them, in a way, reflections of ourselves, of the community, and, you know, I hope and I pray unto Jah that...
Yeah. How about Seattle's Tent City 3? Any connections with them of late?
There's a woman named Michelle Marchand that we haven't actually broken through to connecting with the people in the camp yet. You know, we hear news reports, hear about palliative, and I understand their policies are pretty much the same as ours.
Well, I know that they still have a camping ban up there, but they did win a legal case which stopped the city from fining the churches for putting them up because they were going from church to church.
Yeah, when they were over in Rich Lang's church over there in Ballard, you know, they got that and they won their conditional use permit. But I see from reports that at the end of the month they have to move again. You know, so people are still looking for permasites. I talked to Tom Earth down at Santa Cruz Service Center. And I tried to get through to Larry Templeton in our sister tent city today down in Santa Cruz. I couldn't get through to Larry, but I understand they're having problems and they're really looking hard for a piece of ground that they can stand on, a piece of permasite, so that they can, you know, so that we're out of these mobile phases that we're all sort of in at the moment because of the law.
Yeah, the Santa Cruz City Council is meeting in 2 days, in essence, to do a token dismissal of the Camp Paradise situation, and I think Camp Paradise, the Santa Cruz Service Corps, is going to be, the building it's been given as office headquarters will may well be, I think the lease is up at the end of February, so they are, you know, it's it looks like it's kind of the maybe the end of the road. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm hoping that's not, but it's a pretty desperate situation for a small group of people, and I've been advising them they need to simply set up illegally somewhere, and they've been reluctant to do that. Of course, I would be too. I mean, I'm indoors, they're outdoors, but it seemed to me that they have to do that in order to get the support back that they had before, and they just, you know, haven't been able to do that. Part of it has to do with, I guess, they have a person who's has now gotten a back injury and things of that sort. But a part of it has also been, you know, that they just have chosen not to do that over the last 2 months, and that's a difficulty, you know.
Yeah, I understand. I understand their feeling. Because, you know, you try to do things within the law as best you can, but sometimes when the law is just, it's so wrong, you know, like the sleeping bans and the camping and the blanket bans, you just, we were so lucky. We were so fortunate here that the camping ban fell down and there was that hiatus, you know, that brief period of time, because the city here appealed it immediately, and the city's kind of wimped out here, and they allowed their appeal to lapse, and then they withdrew it. Because it's a good piece of legislation, it was overturned on two good, sound constitutional grounds.
It's still overturned, right? There is no legal camping ordinance yet in Portland, right?
Well, what's happening now is they're changing up a thing called Title 14, and we're fighting that.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes up on May 7th, and what they're trying to do is sort of bring it in the back door. They're saying that camping is unlawful, and illegal. What they're doing now is they're getting people on trespass,
mm-hmm.
and this law has to do about civil law ordinances and all kinds of nonsense. But, one person blocks the sidewalk more than another if he stands for a minute. There was a guy that died at the homeless marathon, Roland Lee Page, when we had a memorial service for him. But you can't sit on the sidewalk, you can't kneel and pray, and you can't die.
Yep. Yeah, we had a death here. There's been a murder case. Two homeless people have been arrested allegedly for killing what may be a third homeless person, but this is in the area where Camp Paradise was previously situated, but of course with Camp Paradise gone, the security and the organization and the community they provided was gone, and you had other things happening.
Yeah.
We're talking to Jack Tafari of Dignity Village, and Jack, you've been with Dignity Village, what, since its origin about a year and a half ago, right? Or about a year?
I was one of the original soldiers. You know, one of the original soldiers.
And Dignity Village came out of Street Roots, out of the Doorways Project, the newspaper that homeless people sell up there?
Yeah, Street Roots. It's a good paper. It deals in freedom of expression and freedom of speech.
What about organizing? I was looking at the latest issue of Street Roots. I wasn't terribly impressed, by the way, but... I like to see these pilot projects. I like to see, you know, people serving as a beacon, Dignity Village, Tent City 3, Camp Paradise. But my sights always kind of return to the mass of people. And, you know, the organizing that needs to be done there. Is any of that happening in Portland? Is there any kind of homeless civil rights movement happening?
There's nothing like the homeless union, the stuff that's going on in Berkeley, California right now. You know, they're working down there, Ryan Hurley and Michael. They just came up and visited us up here.
We're talking Michael Deal?
No, Mike Hurley. They're from BOSS, the Berkeley something for self...
Better Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah.
And they're working there. They want to create something called Peace Camp up there. And they came up to look at our self-governance model and to take it back and to talk to people down there and see what they could come up with
mm-hmm.
down there. So, you know, people are kind of looking and checking. You know, people from Share Wheel came down a couple of weekends ago.
And Share is the Tent City 3 up in Seattle, right?
Yes. Excuse me if I'm not clear.
No, you're good.
And then Khalil from Landon Trust, we heard that he was coming up. Khalil wanted to come up, but I haven't actually spoken.
Yeah, Khalil did come up briefly for a weekend, but I think he wasn't able to get in touch with you. He's the environmental advisor to Camp Paradise.
Yes, I know. I'm aware of that.
Yeah, I was telling that to the many masses out there. Remember, we're in our open conversation here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we welcome visits from our brothers and sisters all up and down the coast. You know, we have a Quonset hut, and that's basically our infirmary. But you know, we close that off and let visitors stay there. So, we welcome contact with all other groups, and we're very much interested in exchanges for social and cultural reasons.
Any connections with Dome Village and Ted Hayes Dome Village in Los Angeles, Justiceville?
No, I've tried to get through to Ted, and for some reason I don't get responses there.
Yeah, pretty conservative.
Yeah, conservative is my take, and also the fact that they began with Justiceville, and they began in '94. So you know they're sort of more established, and they're less. Less than the chasing around. I mean, they're sort of the forerunner, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're an established community. And, you know, I haven't... Then again, I'm technologically very backward.
Me too.
You know, I have trouble clicking onto people's websites and sending in messages that way.
Well, you should look at the Huff website. I think we've gotten some Huff upgrades lately. If you click, and this goes for anyone else listening out there, to Homeless United, you should be able to,
Homeless United for fun and friendship, Robert?
For friendship and freedom and for furious fucking. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Oh,
but friendship and freedom. There we go.
Yeah.
Jack, I'm going to have to roll because we have a nasty city council meeting coming up in 2 days where they're going to try to make it even worse for us under the camping ordinance and throw a bone, not even a bone, a bit of gristle to Camp Paradise, which isn't going to mean much.
I understand in Isla Vista right now, they've gotten until tomorrow to get in some advice because as I understand it, what's happened there is that the unincorporated piece that they're on of Santa Barbara, Isla Vista, there's a park there and they're on parkland, and that people have been criminalized for a long time on that parkland with tickets and things like that for sleeping. And good heavens, they didn't have a sleeping ban in place. I mean, my goodness, other people might be attracted to that area of the country to get some peace and some rest. You know, so they've got to get that sleeping ban up quick, you know, which is wicked and nasty.
Yeah, and actually...
It's inhumane.
I put out an email about that to you, and it's quite appropriate you bring it up. And... I got into a long conversation with someone before you on the air about more local Santa Cruz matters, but this is something that I suggested we discuss on the radio, which is that what can Isla Vista do? This is the small encampment in north of Santa Barbara, California, that is now being told by the park district there, you know, get all your information in because we're putting in a sleeping ban. If you want to be, you know, on top of it, you've got to give us the solutions within, you know, 24 hours. And my answer to that is no, you can't find the solutions in 24 hours. You have the reality of people who are, you know, outside without alternatives who are trying to do the best they can. And given the California necessity defense rulings, and have been successful in Santa Barbara, and so are actually right in that same jurisdiction, they're unlikely to be able to successfully prosecute people. It's really, I think, the campers who hold the upper hand if they're willing to keep it. But again, I'm speaking from a distance, and I'm speaking from indoors, so you know, it's just one perspective.
Well, we're even further away up here, but I would hope that maybe Glenn Maurer or some good attorney would be able to help him there. And I'm putting through to Mark Jolin, to my friend Ibrahim, just came in and said hello.
Hey, hello to Ibrahim, and hello to Mark.
Yeah,
Ibrahim.
But I'll get through to Mark Jolin and see if we can get some legal advice down there.
That's great, and keep me advised. I'm going to roll just in case anybody else is trying to get through on this line.
Okay.
And Jack, thank you very much for calling in from Portland, Oregon, our longest distance call so far today. Moscow still has not weighed in, but we're waiting.
Well, listen, much love and respect to you and to all Santa Cruz crew and to our brothers and sisters down in Isla Vista and, if they're possibly listening, up in Seattle.
Hey, and if you're anybody from Camp Goodwill in Toronto, let me know.
I sure will do that.
Thanks, Jack.
Nice to see
you. Good to hear you. Bye-bye.
And it's Santa Cruz, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz, coming at you, 96.3 FM. It's a little bit after noon. We've got another hour or so to go on the show. Hopefully we're going to be talking with supervisorial candidate Mike Schmidt about his new homelessness plank. We're going to be hearing some stuff around the camping ban, a historical look back 3 years about the actual debate that happened around this contested three-day rule that City Council and the city attorney now insists is actually the law at the present time, when in fact, I believe, and I think other social service providers and activists agree with me, there's only a three-day rule in driveways, not in backyards, side yards, business parking lots, or church parking lots. But again, it's all kind of a tempest in a teapot, although it's making the teapot even smaller and smaller by what they're doing. They're making it even harder and harder for people to find places to hide, places to sleep, places to be. Want to call in and talk about this? Phone number is 427-3772. Want to talk about the Isla Vista encampment, Camp Dignity, or any of the other civil rights concerns you've heard mentioned in the last hour or two? Number again, 831-427-3772.
We're talking with
Rochelle.
And Rochelle, you're out here on the streets. You live in your vehicle.
Right, 7 weeks, Saturday.
And how is life, hassles from the police, or in terms of your vehicle or camping or not?
Yes.
What happened?
I was sitting in my vehicle, parked, where there's no signs to move it between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m., no signs for two-hour parking, no red mark, green marks, white marks painted on the curb, nothing, right on the other side of the railroad tracks next to the gravel company. They come and pound on my window relentlessly.
What time is it?
It's just after 4 a.m. I can't sleep, so I help Cowboy, who's at the shelter, does the bikes and mechanics, look after people's cars or if there's any hassles or anything.
Right.
I mean, I'm not a volunteer, I'm not anything, but I just like always lend a helping hand whenever needed.
Right.
So he finishes pounding. I roll down my window. He's right in my face, like this.
A CPD officer or?
Police. Santa Cruz police officer.
Did you notice his name or?
No. Dark hair, medium build, medium mustache. Glasses, says, "This is not a camping spot. Move on."
Now, were you seated? Were you in night clothes, slumbering? What were you?
Seated, listening to my music, in my clothes.
Right.
Just had pulled up.
And was it, could he see from the, as he passed by that you were not asleep? Or would it appear perhaps that you were?
No, he could see clearly that I was not asleep. I even had something in my hand starting to read it.
Okay.
Clearly not asleep, clearly not camping.
When did this happen?
3 weeks ago yesterday.
Okay. And so what did you do in response to this?
Okay, I said, okay, thank you, officer. Thank you for your time in serving and protecting the citizens of Santa Cruz County. I will move my vehicle promptly and without any more hesitation. Sorry for inconvenience. Thank you.
And what happened then?
He said, thank you, rolled up my window, and I proceeded to move my car.
Where did you go?
Moved my car to Elm in Washington.
And then what?
Got out and walked around.
Now, what do you normally do at night? Do you sleep in your vehicle? Do you sleep outside? Do you find someplace else to sleep?
I not sleep.
When do you sleep?
Sometimes during the day at a friend's house. I have night terrors. I have severe post-traumatic stress and severe depression from being in a domestic violence for 10 years that I fled from, and now I'm on the streets waiting for housing,
right,
on a waiting list.
How long have you been waiting for housing?
7 weeks Saturday.
Yeah. What are you from, Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
I'm from Washington State, born and raised, and lived here off in Santa Cruz County, surrounding Santa Cruz since 1997.
And are you a person who's been working, who hasn't been working, been pretty much on disability during that time? How would you describe your situation?
I've been working on Social Security, full disability for a back injury. I supplement my income with volunteering and I'm a teacher, tutoring, and I have worked whenever it comes up.
What would you really like to do? What do you feel you're good at?
Teaching, the medical field. I know what people need before they know what they need, so I lend assistance to any group, you know, from hospice to handicapped to homeless. I just have the natural ability to step into whatever they need and gently bring them into where they need to be without, you know, them losing their pride or their dignity or their, you know, I basically lead their lives
how I have a natural vibe that they need to lead it, or not need to, but something directs me, and then they just like mesh into it, and then I could go out of their lives. It's really nice.
Now, what about you? What do you think you need? How can people be helpful to you?
That's my job this week, is to be a grateful receiver, and I'm not doing too well. I received help from Cowboy to look at my car, and I received a sleeping bag this week. The sleeping bag's wet and needs to be washed, and I need change to put it, to wash it. So I got a sleeping bag this week, and I've been cold ever before that. Every night I've been here, it's been colder than the night before, and the last two nights I've been warmish.
And I'm the glad. Armory, or?
No, never. I never would. I never will.
Because?
Can't be confined anywhere from being confined in domestic violence. I couldn't get off the property because he never left me a car. So I'm afraid. That's all I'll say about that.
Anything you want to say to the folks out there at Free Radio or in the community?
I just want to say, where are all people that have ever lived on the streets? Where are all the people that grew up and lived in the 60s and 70s? Where are all the veterans that don't have severe post-traumatic stress and severe depression and severe, like, cancers or medical problems or, you know, aches and pains? Where are all the people that someone's given a quarter to? Where are all the people? You know, there are people, millions and millions of people, because I've known a lot of people that have been on the streets or down on their luck. Where are all that? Where, if every single person gave a quarter, not money, I guess, just sat with someone on a bench, every single person on the streets anywhere in the world has a story, and we're not dirty. My best friend in the whole wide world came here. He has dreadlocks and wears, you know, baggy pants. Someone drove by him and said, get a shower. Both of us had had it. He's a guy, I'm a girl, had had it to our last thing. He had just left a relationship. I was just newly on the streets. And we just loved each other immediately. And we didn't need anybody saying that. And then another lady said, somebody asked for a quarter. Him nor I panhandled their change. But one of our friends asked for a quarter. They turned around and almost spit on us. She was like making a thing to spit on us or spit on the ground like in disgust. And I looked her right in the eye and I said, ma'am, one day your daughter will ask me for a quarter. I will give her a quarter, and then I will give you a quarter, because you'll be laying there in your own vomit or distressed or sick because you can't pay your medical. Just lost your car in your house, and I will also give you a quarter because that's who I am. And I hope this example helps you step up and just not spit on us. Just simply politely say no.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was about 3 or 4 days ago down near Yuppie Planter, about half a block away. I'm going to play you now a little bit, as we kind of segue into this next section, of the debate back in 1999 in February and March, when all our hopes raised so high by the election were essentially destroyed by Catherine Byers, who decided that there was no community consensus, as she put it, which means she couldn't get the businesses and some of the residents to agree to the idea that homeless people have the right to sleep somewhere legally at night. Though she agreed with that, she would not, because she couldn't find a place that everyone would agree on, she decided to make no change in the law that criminalizes sleeping from 11 to 8:30 a.m. in terms of that basic criminalization. So there was a lot of discussion about it. We're going to be examining later this three-day rule controversy, which is really, as I said, a tempest in a mini teapot, although, again, it means even less availability for homeless people if we accept the current interpretation of the city attorney. But there were some interesting things that came out of this discussion. Sugar and Crone, two council members who later became much more conservative and hostile to homeless advocates, were very outspoken on the issue. Not outspoken enough, because they could have led the charge, but refused to do it because they wanted to maintain good relations with Catherine Byers, who was the so-called swing vote on the city council. But Sugar had some interesting things to say about the magnet effect, and this is what he said in February of 1999 at the council meeting where the minor changes were discussed.
I tracked here. I wanted to respond to one of the things that Mike had said concerning the magnet effect, and that is very early on in this process, very early on in the 20-some-odd meetings that we had with people who were steadfastly opposed to any change of the camping ordinance, present, I put out an impassioned plea for empirical evidence, some kind of numbers, some kind of evidence to support this whole magnet theory. Anything, anecdotal, statistical, scientific studies, non-scientific studies, nothing. In all this time, I have not received anything. This task force has not received anything in the way of anecdotal evidence, notwithstanding the fact that we've researched it independently. We've had Paul Brendel from CAB going out and doing research. There is simply nothing out there, ladies and gentlemen, to suggest that there is any validity to the magnet effect. Now, it's true, as Mike pointed out, that there is a difference between, I suppose, the study that Catherine was looking at was focused on, is there a magnet effect when you're providing services? And you legitimately point out that this is different. Here we're not talking about providing services, we're talking about letting people sleep. And my response to that is that if people are not going to be drawn here for food and services, they're sure not going to be drawn out here for the privilege of being able to sleep in the cold with a blanket or a sleeping bag. So the concern is very legitimate. I don't want to downplay that because it is widely held. And I really respect that concern. And I really want to work to allay those fears, but there is simply no there.
I'm going to hear from comments from Michael Hernandez.
And that was Keith Sugar in the February 99 discussion on the camping ordinance, pointing out that the task force that he was a part of, which met over 20 times in the previous 2 months, found no evidence of a magnet effect. And a month later, when he spoke again before City Council,